You are listening to an adult formation edition of our podcast from St. Thomas Episcopal Church in Bellevue, Washington. We are a community that seeks God's presence, serves Christ and others, and grows together in faith. Welcome to our podcast. The following presentation is part of our six-part series, The Languages of Love. This session was presented by the Reverend Steve Best on Wednesday, May 4th, 2016.
Okay, let's get started. So I want to just say a couple of things, and Karen, come on up. This is the kickoff for our series. So, Karen, we love to talk about
love.
Yeah. So. A joke is that there's certain themes that preachers consistently go back to. And I don't know who coined it, but he said, boy, Karen's, she always talks about love. And then I realized, well, don't I ever preach about love?
You talk about joy.
I talk about joy, which is actually, and the source of my joy is love. So we're all together.
Yep.
And we are excited that you're here, and we are going to be trading off in the presenting role, and we will be speaking from the point of view of our love languages, and we don't have all five love languages, do we? We have a little bit of them all, just like everybody else, and then we have one or two that are probably primary and secondary.
Kind of not there.
So we have one we overlap with, right, and then there's a couple that we're a little different. So anyway, you're going to get some diversity, but anyway, Karen. For those of you that know Karen, we're on staff together, and we are looking forward to this class.
Yep.
Thank you. So we hear a lot about love in church, don't we? Love your neighbors, yourself, and all of this. Even love your enemy, which is, boy, that's a tough one. I hope there's no enemies in this gathering. But so often we don't really, even in our ceremonies for wedding ceremonies, I almost feel like, all the exchange of, the love vows and everything. And then we just kind of send people out, it's like, we need some practical skills. So this class is going to be aimed at taking something that is very important and precious to us as Christians. And how do we actually live this out? How do we actually express love in a meaningful way? At least a way that our partners, our work associates, kids, grandparents, they can understand what we're saying and make an impact. So that's at the heart of what we're doing tonight. I am curious about, if you don't mind outing yourself, how many are here because they would like to get some insights and work on a romantic relationship, a marriage or a partnership of some sort? Raise your hand. That's your main reason for being here. Well, I'm not sure we want to go there. Yeah. You just jumped, we started there. Now I'm going to say the next thing. How many people are here primarily because they want to understand how to improve their relationship with their child, a teen or a young child? Raise your hand. Okay, so we got a few more. Okay, good. How about workplace associates or friends at work? We've got, yeah. Yeah, this is kind of honesty. Okay, so a few more. How about, what have I missed? So kids, friendships, how about friend, a dear friendship or a housemate? Yeah, okay. Adult kids, yeah. How about learning how to have a better relationship with the different parts within yourself, right? Now, some people are going, what does that mean? Well, like within me, I know I have a playful child, I have a serious adult, I've got, an adventurer, this would mean, I always say we're doing family work, it's the internal family. So Okay, so we have some diversity here, and what we're trying to do that is a bit of a challenge for our series is we want to give some good information that will be applicable in every relationship that you're in. And then we're going to see how this emerges. We thought we would offer some tracks, which means if you're focused primarily on your partnership, your marriage, that we'd have a table set aside for you to have questions that are geared more towards that, and then for parents and so forth. So we don't know exactly how that's going to shake loose, but we're open to making this what you need it to be. So I just want to put that out there. Tonight is an overview. Some of you, let me ask another question. Raise your hand if you've already read Gary Chapman's book, or I heard someone say they've already heard him speak, and so in which case, oh, we're going to be compared to the master. How many are familiar with Gary Chapman? Okay, really, not, boy, that's about a quarter. Yeah, okay. So tonight may be a review for you that have been exposed, but for many of you, it's new information, so we're going to all begin, I think, right at the ground zero. Okay, sound good? So I want to say something about love. And why are we doing this particular thing in church? And this is, you know, you could say, well, this is just a growth seminar, you know. There's nothing wrong with growth, right? But why are we in particular as Christians interested in relationships? Now that sounds like maybe a pretty easy question, but why are we dedicating resources to do this? You're giving up your time tonight to be here, and we are putting energy into, you know, presenting it. So I'm going to just put it out there. Why are relationships and learning how to speak different languages of love important to you as a Christian?
Because God asks us to.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, that's right. But can't you find God without going to church? Do you really have to be part of a community?
Of course, but not in the same way. And mm-hmm. not with the same fellowship and community and mm-hmm. and communal service and activities, no. But yes, there's beauty everywhere we are. It's okay. God's beauty.
That's a wonderful Northwest correct answer. but I actually, I'm going to bring some news to you. In the Bible, it rarely talks about individuals. It primarily talks about groups. Families, households, communities, covenants, tribes. So one of the things I just want to help you change the mindset, it's great that you're here for your own personal growth, but actually what I hope most is that you'll come away with a stronger idea of how we can be the body of Christ, how we can be a we together. And in some of the most difficult situations in church arise because people miscommunicate, and differences are not acknowledged, and it's really painful when the family of God can't get along. So I would say that everything you're saying is true, and I want to say, as a Christian, I hope it's the body of Christ that we most want to strengthen in this experience.
I think one of the things we need to remember, it's essential to know ourselves. We have each been uniquely gifted. There's something that each one of you here has to offer that nobody else in the room could possibly offer because of the uniqueness of you. But the emphasis in Scripture and hopefully in our leadership of this community and in the community itself is that those gifts are for the building up of the body of Christ and the glory of God. So it's really important, and it's a great idea and lots of fun to learn about ourselves and our uniqueness and our giftedness, and we need always to remember what that is for, what we've been given those gifts
right.
for.
Yeah. And what I appreciate what Karen's saying is that we're talking about really gifts. We're calling them love languages, but really it is of ourselves, our love that we're giving, and it takes different forms. We're going to get into that a little bit more. In the original Testament, I prefer saying the original Testament rather than the Old Testament, with the Israelites, there was a notion of God's unconditional love, and it was known as Hesed, and so it was this unbelievable sense of God's mercy and grace that pervades all of creation, starting all the way back to Adam and Eve. Obviously, they needed the love languages class, Adam and Eve did, because they made a few mistakes along the way, and so do we. But the idea is this covenant that God has brought us in together lasts and endures over a lifetime. We live in an age where there's a high divorce rate, for example, and sometimes people are beginning to even question, is it possible to have a lifelong relationship that endures the ups and downs, for rich or for poor, in sickness and in health? And what we're trying to do as Christian communities is raise the bar for premarriage counseling and other resources for couples and families and friends to be able to have the depth and commitment. Because we've all taken, most of us here are baptized Christians. We've made vows, or our godparents made vows for us, and in confirmation we made them our own, to be in this together. So I hope in this series that we offer each other wisdom, because Karen and I, we have a lot we can add, but you all have the wisdom, and that we hope in the small group conversations that you will understand how to support each other better as a result of what we're doing in this class. So Hesed, a lot of times I hear people like say, well, the Old Testament is where the law came, and grace came in the New Testament. Well, grace was there from the very beginning. The Christian story that we are engaged with has to do with agape love, building on the idea of Hesed, love in the original Testament. And this, I want to say a little bit about unconditional love before we get into love languages at all, because if we understand God's love is anything less than unconditional, we're going to have a hard time building anything in the series, because ultimately we're going to discover that we're only imperfectly able to express love in the way that our loved ones need it to be heard, and our friends need to hear. And so there's a sense sometimes of failure. You know, you go to a seminar or something like this, and you get an idea, oh, okay, this is the way it should go. And then you start trying it, and you discover how challenging it is. So agape love is what propels us, and it's unconditional love, and this is what we hope the channels of the love languages opens up, that we can see this persistent, forgiving type of love in all of our relationships. So agape doesn't get mentioned explicitly in the five love languages. He is a Christian, for example, so I would just say all these love languages lead to the source, and the source in my mind is this agape love. I love, I'm going to credit Archbishop Desmond Tutu with this quote. I'm not sure if he quoted somebody else, but actually when you quote someone else, it's the highest form of compliment. Sometimes plagiarism is a dirty word, but I'm going to use this quote. There is nothing we can do to get God to love us more, and there is nothing we can do to get God to love us less. So as we get into all this, just make sure that that's your foundation for your discussion. So let's move forward. I'm going to briefly go over some of the brief descriptions on the five love languages, just as a reference point. So the handout that I've given you, let's just take a look at that a little bit. First of all, for those of you that are interested, I have listed the particular gifts or languages that will be talked about in the order, but Karen and I reserve the right to change it up, because we're discovering in this world of, with our dear rector Lex being gone and some other things that are happening, it's like, control. There'll be one of us here every week, we'll promise you, and we will cover all five of these. On June 8th, which is our conclusion with receiving gifts, Karen and I will be offering a worship experience to a Eucharist, and it will have some wonderful prayers and ways that we can kind of pull everything together that we've learned. So we're going to start today with the introduction, and then next week will be the words of appreciation, which that's my primary love language. So just tell me how much you appreciate the fact that I'll be presenting on that. And then acts of service and so forth. I'm just going to hit a few high points because some of you, this is new information. Again, some of you, this is will be review. Each week, we're going to go into much more depth. So tonight, I'm just giving you the briefest of definitions of these gifts so you have kind of a framework. And then when I am done with that, then we're going to have an actual survey that you can take. And we're gonna, I'm going to encourage you to take it tonight. I'll talk to you a little bit more about that survey, but if you take more than 15 minutes to do that survey, you are working way too hard. You're overanalyzing the question and so forth. And this will be a beginning point, but just know it's a discernment process. So if it's not, some of you will take that survey tonight and you'll say, oh my gosh, that is so me. And some of you will say, that is so not me. And, you know, so just know that it'll be a continuum. But over the weeks, we're going to go in discernment, and you're going to hear other people's conversations about these languages, and you'll have more information, and you'll get some more support. So I always go back and forth about whether the survey should be done at the beginning of a series or at the end. So we decided to have it in the very beginning. So let's start with quality time. I would say that this love language, when I think of all the different couples that are in my office for help, I would say quality time is one of these. All these languages come up in the work, but quality time seems to be one of the biggest issues that couples are facing. And I would say not just couples, but anyone. How about friendships? I almost feel like, you know, friendships are endangered species. I mean, we can go to Facebook and we can kind of shoot an email at that, because, you know, I have a very good friend that lives in Seattle, and we live almost to Woodinville, and it's like we have to like plan, you know, weeks in advance, and then, you know, it's almost like I have to, you know, do the appropriate sacrifice to the traffic gods. You know, it's like all this work and we're just trying to get together, you know, for dinner, you know. So this quality time, I think, is so important. And I would say, so I, you know, defined it, and I'm using Chapman's definition, but massaged it a little bit. Giving your undivided attention and energy and time being part of that. And I would say that, how many of you have heard that, okay, well, I don't have much quantity, but what's really more important is quality. Raise your hand if you think it's impossible to tease out those two, quality and quantity. Tease out. Some people say, you know, we can have quality time without much quantity, and that will get us through. And others will say, we can have quantity time, but they don't really emphasize the quality of it. They might just be, you know, vegetating in a semi-conscious state for 4 hours together. And they might say, okay, well, we had our quality time together. So I guess my question is, quantity and quality, quantity time, quality time, how many of you think that is intimately connected? Because I have found that that's a kind of a trap, you know, in a way. What do you think? Yeah? Yeah. Some thoughts?
Yeah. Needs to be both.
Yeah.
Can't be one or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. All right. I think so. Others?
You can't make quality time just happen on demand. You have to be around each other for a while for the stuff to be rich.
Yes.
Somebody over here has their hand up. I think I'm just reiterating what you're saying. I mean, the quality emerges from the quantity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess I'll be the contrarian. I think you choose to be present and in the moment, and you can do that whenever you can. Hey, spending 4 hours at a movie versus spending a half hour having a meaningful conversation. Time doesn't matter. It's that you are engaged in that.
Yeah, so we're saying they're both are important, but in this, you'll see in the survey in Chapman's stuff, he says quality time, and I guess I'm just kind of raising the question. He doesn't seem to talk enough about the quantity, that actually the quantity of time affects the quality. And it's really true with kids. I mean,
right.
It's like, oh my gosh, okay, Jimmy, we're going to have quality time tonight. And I from 8:15 to 8, 37, I'm available. You know, we have to be hanging out for those windows to open. So, well, there's those.
Well, the other thing, though, is that when you can spend a half an hour and be in a deep and rich place, it's because you've had a quantity of time with that person. So it's not necessarily, no, it's, right? I mean, it's not necessarily in the moment. Yeah. And your point is perfectly well taken.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, I think it's just a false dichotomy. They're intimately connected.
One without the other, or one more diminished than the other, yeah. You lose the genuineness of that situation.
The genuineness.
It's more genuine.
Less forced, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Good.
Did everybody hear that? Things are more genuine when there's more of a balance, is what Keith said.
I think Mary Rosson had, back at the far table.
I totally agree that you've got to have both quantity and quality. However, I will say that mindfulness research on spending time with children recommends that you, if you're spending 10 minutes of child-centered play time, especially with a young child, but even an older child where you let them direct the play, that if you do that every day, it's a substantial change in behavior that the child has. And so that is an example of quality time. And just that awareness that you need to set aside everything else. And, you know, as a mom or a dad, anybody who's taking care of a child, you know that you could be with that child for 8 hours and have a lot of conversations and be with them, but you're probably not playing a child's game very much, if at all, at that time. So intentionally setting time to have the child lead you is really important. And if you don't have that intentionality, if you don't, you're not being coached or trained, then you are likely to miss out. I mean, I'll speak by myself as a parent. I definitely would if I hadn't been given that advice, and not that I do it as much as I should, but when I do, it's I see the benefits, and it is only 10 minutes. And I set a timer because it's hard.
I find that research hopeful, because the truth is we are really limited on time. So, you know, that's really, I'm very interested in what that research was about. I'm just raising some questions for us to look at what quality really means. And ultimately it's going to be in the context of a relationship. And I think that undivided attention is the clincher, because what I see a lot is really divided attention, you know. And, you know, one of my hobbies is to observe people. I try not to judge, but, you know, and you just go to restaurants and stuff like that. And, you know, I know I'm an old fogey now, but, you know, when I see a couple in particular, you know, with very little facial contact, and it's just they're texting, and it just, to me, looks like they are somewhere else other than fully present with the person they're in. Unless they happen to be sharing what is on, like they're looking at a movie together, and then they're kind of talking about it. But do you know what I mean? The couples that seem they're vacant, or maybe they're in a group of friends, but then to me it looks like they're all doing their, it's like together alone, I guess is the way I describe it. So some questions to be answered, but yeah.
Oh, it's all right. Thank you for being on a talk radio show where I'm the last one before the break. I get 13 seconds or something. I just wanted to mention that I think that there are a couple of things that come to mind. One is very simply that it might not be engaging in a meaningful sharing of time. It might be less important, or I think it is less important, what I might think that what it means to have quality time, and more about the person that is my audience that I'm trying to think of as what is his or her, what is an important time for that person, what does it mean to that person? And I think part of it is you give of yourself in that sense, that I might not be interested in, let's say, playing chess, okay? But it is important to the other person, and so do we have to negotiate to find something that is we both define as quality, or does one every now and then say, okay, that's fine, we'll do that, and, you know, that's fine. I can give that the person whom I love that time that he defines or she defines as quality. And the other thing I think it is that I would not argue the point strongly, but I do tend to think of quantity of time and quality of time as two separate ideas that often come together, but certainly we've all met, or I hope, if you haven't yet, I sure hope you do, met a person who is truly charismatic, and I don't mean it in a biblical sense or Greek sense, but rather somebody who in the vernacular would be considered to be an arresting personality that you feel as though when he or she is speaking to you, that person is you are the most important person in the world at that moment to that person. I've had that experience a couple of times, and it's amazing. And I know that even though the amount of time actually spent, it could be measured in maybe a minute or maybe a bit more, the actual time seems to be timeless. It's an amazing experience. And also, it was a sincere effort. It was not political glad handling. It was rather a very interesting experience to have that kind of attention paid to one's opinions. Anyway, thank you.
That's a good ad for the series, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
Speaking the love language.
Wonderful. So again, I'm just going to do some overviews. I'm just trying to pique your curiosity because we're going to have a whole class on each one of these, okay? Just raising some questions. Now, the receiving gifts, offering material or concrete symbols of thoughtfulness in such a way that the other person feels personally known and cared for. So we've all received the gift, right, that didn't do much for us. How about the white elephant gifts that end up being given away? This seems to be getting not materialism, because I mean, I guess each one of these languages or gifts have a shadow side. In the best way, this is like saying that the gift, and some of you may have this this language or skill, the exquisite gift, it can speak 1,000 words. I mean, it really is unbelievable. When Janie was, my wife was coming back from Australia, she brought back an amazing gift. It was a cross that was made by an Aboriginal Christian, and it had both Aboriginal symbol and Christian together, and it was such a thoughtful gift, you know, that it wasn't just like, okay, I'm oh my gosh, my husband's been taking care of the dogs and the kid for 3 weeks, and I haven't found anything, but I haven't really looked that hard. I'm at the airport, and I'm just gonna pull something off the shelf. I'm not judging. I've been there before. I've been there before. I've been there before, but I'll tell you, it was the thoughtful gift that was personalized that kind of spoke to me, and I could receive it as a really a wonderful deposit of love. I think this one will be fun for us to talk about, because a lot of times people feel like if they have financial stresses, that they get kind of stressed out around this category, and actually it's much more the thoughtfulness behind it and the creativity, I think. Now, some of you'll think that's just a bunch of baloney. I want the the carat diamond. I want the big diamond. You know, hey, if that's the love language, then I'm not going to judge. Okay, acts of service, offering to do concrete things that the other person would like you to do, so that their workload is lightened or that they might be spared doing a task that they find unpleasant or boring. Yeah. You know, have you ever had those nights where you're home and you're so tired, and then a neighbor, a friend comes by and says, oh, I can water those plants tonight? We actually have kind of neighbors like that that kind of look after you and say, oh my gosh, that is so wonderful. You know, I'm so tired, I can't even have a conversation, but you're going to water those plants? Oh, that's wonderful. Acts of service, doing these concrete things. You know, the classic thing, you know, when you think of it like a baby that's, you know, newborn, and let's say, I'll do the reverse of the stereotype. It's the stay-at-home dad with a newborn, and, you know, and all frazzled out, and the wife has the job outside the home, is coming home, and notice that the whole house is a mess, nothing's been picked up, and instead of going over and, you know, maybe giving a hug to the husband, she immediately gets to work and starts picking up all the toys that are there, and maybe doing a little vacuuming. You know, these acts of service sometimes just completely flop if that husband wanted a hug, you know. So I just think this will be really interesting. But many people would like, many, you know, spouses would love, you know, it's like, ah, yeah, acts of service, particularly after 8 o'clock at night when you're just, you know, really wiped out, not a bad way to go. Physical touch. I'm just smiling because Chapman was saying, you know, he hasn't done the research as to gender differences. We'll have some interesting conversations about that, I hope, in this series. But he was just noting anecdotally from his counseling practice that there were gender differences there, and that there was a certain bias on the part of men thinking that, well, certain kinds of, like, sexual touching, I mean, that really counts. But the non-sexual account, you know, touch, that was somehow inferior. So I'm not going to open that one up too wide, but I thought that was an interesting thing for us to look at, is gender differences in regard to some of these gifts. I think that's a pretty straightforward thing, but, you know, touch is really an interesting one. Many families have different cultural backgrounds. I mean, I grew up in a family, typical white Anglo-Saxon family, and not an awful lot of hugging. And I have to say, when I became an Episcopal convert and I saw all that given the peace, I got a little anxious. And then came a breath of fresh air from the South by the name of Lex Breckinridge. No, I'm not making fun of Lex, I hope. But I'm just saying, you could really, we talked about differences. You said, wow, you guys are really chilly up here. And kind of, you know, and you could see, again, the love language in play. And I think it's really been a gift for our community to begin to be a little bit more physically affectionate. And it's a loaded topic in our culture because of lots of issues with sexual harassment in the workplace and all sorts of things. But I think that's a topic area that I hope we really get into, because I think it has a lot to unpack.
Steve.
Yeah.
I just would like to share that when I came to interview at St. Thomas with Lex, I'm pretty sure it was Ann Rogers, who I didn't know at that point, but Ann is here in the beautiful pink and blue. I was supposed to meet Lex. He was late, as he often is, because he's so relational. He was coming from something that he needed to be at as long as he was at. And I was walking around and things, but he, before we began to talk, he threw his arm around, I'm pretty sure it was Anne, kissed her on the cheek, and called her my dear. And I just thought, I just came from seminary. We learned you're not supposed to do that. I love this guy. And it was a defining moment in my call process here.
Yeah, it's a big topic, and I think a very important one. I'm just amazed at how much can be communicated with an appropriate touch at the right time. It's just, a lot of times words elude us. You know, think of the friend that has consoled you when you were inconsolable. You just, you know, you had a major loss or something, and they just, you know, they just gently put their hand on your shoulder. I mean, you know, it's powerful. So we got physical touch as one of those big love languages. It'll be interesting to see how that comes out. And then not least, is words of affirmation, verbal compliments, encouragement, emotional validation in such a way that the other person feels secure and affirmed in who they are and who they're becoming. I just really need words of affirmation. You know, sometimes when I go up and preach, my sermon is to my, you know, I'd start off with a little prayer. I go, I hope there's just at least one other person other than me that is going to benefit from this sermon. As you go up in that big pulpit and look out there, it's like, oh my gosh, because it's monologue, which is, you get nonverbals, but it's really dialogical stuff that I like the most. I think this one will be really important. I think most people in our culture are have gotten used to negativity. You look at the way the shows go and movie media, We're becoming kind of skilled at who's most cynical, jabs, sarcasm. But I'm not talking about cheesy affirmations that are insincere. I mean heartfelt. I hope all of you have had that experience where encouragement has made a difference to your day or even your career or your marriage. This is the right person giving you the right level of words that just really, I can hear some words that have been given by teachers and stuff over the years. It's still with me. You know, the voice is powerful. And unfortunately, the negative voice can travel with us for a long time, too. So anyway, words of affirmation is that other beautiful love language. So what I'm going to propose, again, we're going to go in more depth over the series, is, Karen, if we could get these surveys out, and we have two choices. One is for those of you that are single and you're more focused on maybe friendships, or if you're in a couple's relationship, that would be another option, right?
Not giving you the parent surveys at this point. What needs to happen is you need to understand your own language, and either of these surveys will help you to do that. The couple survey helps you to understand your own language because you will read the questions as part of a couple, not because you need to be a couple to understand. So I'm going to come around to the tables, and I'll offer you either one. I have a couples or an individuals, and you can just tell me what you want. Okay? And then later on in the series, if you want to work on the kids' things, Steve will provide.
Yeah, there's a website that is part of this handout, and you can go there and you can see all his different surveys, and he has applications for military. He even has a kids' book that talks about how kids, in their engagement with animals, can discover gifts. You know, so it's for children to read for themselves. It's really cool.
No, you won't do it together because you, Anne, are discovering your language. You, Mark, are discovering your language. They're likely not going to be the same language, so you don't do it as a couple. It's just that if you read a question about relationship, if you were a single person, you wouldn't want to read the question as, it's more meaningful to me when my partner X. That doesn't work for a single person. And for a coupled person who is really in a couple relationship, if it said, I feel loved when someone touches me on the shoulder to express concern, that's not necessarily the way that would happen in a relationship. So it just helps you learn your own language better, I think. I had a hard time with the individual one because I kept looking at the whole thing as, when it asked about someone I loved, my husband was constantly the one who popped to mind.
I could have just told you to ask yourself, what do I complain about the most that I don't get? What do I request most often from those I love? Yeah. Because we tend to give our love in the language that we prefer, not the language that our partner or friend prefers.
Say that again, Steve.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, I was just saying we tend to give our love to those we care about in the language, our primary language, not necessarily in the language that they preference is their most important. And so that's a real disconnect. Because what happens is then you think, well, I am showing my love regularly. Yeah. I think it's a little bit like going up to Canada wondering what is going to be discounted in the currency. You know, some years the dollar is stronger, sometimes it's weaker, and you never get a, you know, straight dollar for dollar, rarely, exchange rate. So something's lost in the exchange rate when you give in another language form. Are there any questions so far? I'm going to send you to a small group with some questions, but it's okay if it doesn't make complete sense, but most of you will probably see that there was one, maybe two of those languages that kind of stood out, and then the others were less preferenced. Is that what you saw in your, if you have something really unusual, you better call me immediately. Like a flat line, if you had nothing and none of the categories. Great question. Now, I want you to know there was only one person I know of on this earth that had 100% in all five categories, and his name was?
Jesus.
And I'm not Jesus. So I would say it's most common to have probably two that are really strong and maybe one that's low or two. And then in the middle, but usually you get a primary and a secondary, often, yeah.
Do you think these are nature or nurture?
Oh, the question, is this nature or nurture? And the standard response is both. Now, you want my little thing? It's one-third genetic, one-third environment, and one-third free choice. And I have no empirical data to back that up, but I just think all three of those are at play. And love ultimately is a form of choice. I mean, some of the love languages that you're going to be asked to grow in because of a friendship or partnership is not natural. It is not natural to you, and it's hard work, but you're making the choice to do it. And if your loved one, partner, friend is gracious, they'll give you at least partial credit for trying, even if you didn't quite make the mark. Thanks for remembering our anniversary with that gift. At least you tried, okay. Any other questions about, this is just a quick and dirty way of getting you moving in the right direction. And again, the series will unfold in such a way that you'll get more clarity. If there are any more other questions?
Question about family of origin and patterns learned from that and how it relates to other issues of training, community involvement, service, and so forth. Can you relate?
Yeah, I would put that in the environment. What was modeled to you? I mean, like in my own home, there was very little physical affection demonstrated between my parents and towards me. It was a if you see the big fat Greek wedding, you know, the Mediterranean family, that's we were the WASP family, yeah. And so it was very much, it's been hard over time to learn how, when it's appropriate. So I think the environment is huge. And if you have models for service, you know, that is a huge impact. And that's what we hope we are impacting as a faith community, too. These are all love languages we want to promote. So, environment.
And remember, it's not, there really isn't any judgment. That would just make everything we're trying to do here futile. What we're trying to understand is, what is our native language? What is the language that I speak? So that my love language is not the same. My primary language, I'm bilingual, my primary languages are not the same as my husband's. And so does that mean anything other than the fact that we don't speak the same language? No. No language is better. No language is worse. And at some level, while it matters to our person and our own self-discovery, it doesn't make a lick of difference whether it's environment or nature or nurture. And not that it's not an interesting and important question, but in order to do what we're trying to do here, at least this first night, it doesn't make any difference. What we're trying to discover is what language do you use to express love?
Yeah, the most natural.
Yeah, what's takes your the lead, yeah. mother tongue? What's your native language?
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Just on my scores, a lot of them were just in the middle. I mean, I have one primary one, but then they're all kind of condensed.
Yeah.
I mean, I have one that's really low one and one sort of kind of high, but the rest are all kind of in the same spot.
I call those middle ones the swing vote.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the really low ones, there isn't much juice there for you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Either giving or receiving at that language level. Mm-hmm. And there's usually one that's way out there in the head. That's the real lead. And I think the other moderate ones can follow the lead.
Okay.
They back it up because these are concentric circles. I mean, we're artificially separating them out, but they do influence each other in a big way. Okay. Yeah.
And if you have a little bit in most categories, that means you're on your way to being able to converse with the people whose primary languages those are.
And you're becoming like Jesus.
So I'm just a little confused and would like a little clarity. Yep. So the way that I tend to give love to others is totally different from what nourishes me to receive. And so I feel a little confused, like you were saying, maybe they're supposed to be one and the same.
First of all, I hope there's not a should in there.
I didn't say that right.
Yeah, my observation is, a generalization, is that we tend to give love in the way we want to receive it.
In the same way we want to receive it.
Yeah.
So I'm just a highly conflicted person.
Well, and there may be some good reasons for that.
Okay.
Yeah, there may be some good reasons, and I'd be happy to talk to you more privately on that. Yeah.
Well, I agree with Stephanie because I think this survey is about what you expect or you want. It's not about what you give. So I don't see this as reflecting what I do at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're not alone. You two are soulmates. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so intrigued that there's no reference here to just the simple courtesies. Mm. A please, a thank you, I'm sorry. I guess those mean a lot to me. And it's not about a gift. It's mm-hmm. not about a tangible. It's just about mm-hmm. a consideration or a concern.
Right.
Does that play in here anywhere?
Again, these are ever so brief of descriptions that you've received so far. And I think when you go in deeper, I have a hunch that your interest in kindness will be found in maybe one more than one area. But I think the words of appreciation, often that's where that kindness shows up. At least the verbal form, the verbal form.
I'm coming. It doesn't help if you put it
on the table. I grew up singing, Jesus loves me, this I know, and I sang it many times. And it sunk in. And so I guess I just kind of express what Jesus told me and do the best I can.
Hear, hear.
Hey.
Yeah, beautiful.
I'll tell you how you express what Jesus told you.
So the two previous comments on being able to give in the language that the recipient wants to receive in, why isn't that true love or true selflessness, that they are perfectly fluent in being able to give the other person exactly what they needed?
Because
I thought that, well, it came across as that you're conflicted in terms of how you feel, but it seems to me that that's the ultimate ability to communicate in the way that the other person needs.
Okay, yeah, right. But I don't think that's the question that was posed. So, Stephanie, you correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think you were saying that it was about the way you understand your loved one's needs and wants and that you communicate that way. I think what I heard you say is what I want to receive as gestures of love is something different than what I want to give. Not what I think my person or the person, the object, not the object, the person who is the loved one. What I want to give is different. My expression of love is different than what I want to receive as an expression of love given to me.
I see really easily when someone needs help with something, mm-hmm. and it just kind of my Enneagram thing too, but it's really easy for me to reach out and just give in that way of acts of service. But acts of service mean nothing to me personally. I mean, they're meaningful. I don't mean they're not meaningful, but they don't speak my love language back to me. Right. Well, part of that's because I'm a one.
Well, I mean, it's going to be a great exploration, but I think you said something. No, I think you said something that was really important because you brought up something that we'll get around to later on, but learning to speak someone else's language, whether it's your sister with whom you've been in conflict or your partner or your child or whatever, that is an act of love without question, and it's an act of selflessness to work hard to learn the love language of the people who whom you love and would like for them to understand and feel that love. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Carrie.
I thought the coolest moment was when Eric and I switched papers, right? We looked at each other's scores, and then we went through the answers, and, oh, okay, that's really interesting. And what's kind of cool is we have really similar scores. But I thought that was neat. It's like, you know, you walk around with a handbook, you know, like an operation, right. Operating handbook, you know, right. Like the glove box. This is how you love me. I love that. And then a question. Yeah. I took an individual, how I prefer love in general. But when I took the relational one, the couples one, my scores were different. And I wonder if that's common.
I think it is. Everything is relational. So have you paid, if you look at yourself when you go hang out with a friend and then compare what parts of you come out with that friend versus another, maybe your spouse, or you're with a kid, we have different parts. It's not like we don't have, I believe we have some of all five of these love languages because we're part of the human race. And we've had teachers, we've had coaches, we've had parents. By now you have been more than exposed to all five languages. But how fluent are you and how motivated have you been to become more fluent? And so that's kind of that whole idea, like if you're, say, well, hey, I speak English, and I haven't had a need to learn Spanish. I just expect everyone to learn my primary language. See, that's what's really cool is when I'm hearing from people that are, they've tuned in, and they've even developed quite a language that wasn't even their native language. And it could have been their environment. They may have had important people in their life that needed they needed to connect with. And so they necessity created the opportunity. So it's about becoming bilingual, trilingual, is it quadrilingual? What's five language? That's the idea is we're stretching. Yeah. I think that's cool what you guys did. You're already beginning to kind of see how you can improve the language skill, huh? Yeah. Good. Other questions? We don't want them all answered because then you won't come back. We came to the first thing. So we have a little bit of time. There's some discussion question there. I'd love to have you get to know your table a little bit better. And if you're not, everyone is paired, everyone's in a table. I'll just take a moment or two and look at some of the questions and see if you connect with anything. And we'd love to support you in any way you can in the conversations.
So we spent a lot of time tonight talking and with questions and so on, and there wasn't a whole lot of time. Steve and I were admiring the level of conversation happening at the tables, and we will endeavor to do things a little differently so there's more time for you at the end, and then hopefully so that you can all share with each other as well. But our time is finished. You are welcome to stay. If you have children, you need to gather them because the child care providers stay. Not this moment. We're going to pray. Wait with me. But not 15 minutes from now with the kids. But you're welcome to stay and continue your conversation if you'd like. We want to honor people's time boundaries. The Lord be with you.
Also with you.
Holy One, we thank you for making us uniquely and wonderfully and beautifully gifted. We thank you for filling our hearts with your love. We thank you for the unspeakable, unnameable ways that you love us. We ask that you fill each of us with your love in all of its many languages, that you give us the grace to desire to know not just you, but all of the ones we care for deeply, and to be able to speak with them in the language that they understand. Now we ask that you keep watch, dear Lord, with those who work or watch or weep this night, and give your angels charge over those who sleep. Tend the sick, Lord Christ, give rest to the weary, bless the dying, soothe the suffering, pity the afflicted, and shield the joyous, and all for your love's sake. Amen.
For more information about St. Thomas Episcopal Church, please visit our website, www.stthomasmedina.org. That's www.stthomasmedina.org.